Welcome to Rethink, a podcast focused on the future of skilled nursing. I'm Tim Mullaney, VP and Editorial Director with Skilled Nursing News, and I'm pleased to introduce this special episode of the podcast featuring highlights from an interview that SNN senior editor Zaida Siddiqui conducted with Dr. Andrew McNamara, Chief Medical Officer with Trilogy Health Services. You'll hear Dr. McNamara's insights on navigating the rise of Medicare Advantage and the Trilogy model of integrated care. Based in Louisville, Kentucky, Trilogy operates over 134 senior living communities across five states, with many offering the full continuum of care, including skilled nursing. Before we hear from Dr. McNamara, I'd like to highlight our Aspect Awards program. The Aspect Awards recognize innovative and dynamic marketing and advertising campaigns across the post-acute and senior care industries. The deadline to apply is coming up on September 30th, and you can learn more at aspectawards.com or by visiting skillnursingnews.com/awards. And now here are highlights of Zaida's conversation with Dr. McNamara.
Kind of reflecting on your, you know, nearly 2 years at Trilogy.
Two and a half.
And first ever, right, Chief Medical Officer. What key insights have you gained about delivering clinical care in the skilled nursing and senior living sectors?
I think it's more complicated than many people think it is. And it doesn't mean that the actual maybe type of care that you provide, but how you provide the care. Clearly, you know, there's a lot of regulation, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But just understanding what the rules are, why they're there, I think is always an important thing. And then obviously the different areas of care. So for us, as you know, we're, you know, kind of fully integrated company, continuity of care kind of place. And so with, you know, independent living, assisted living, some of those areas, you know, we're looking now to try to develop newer models to address those areas. So I just think that there's, again, just a lot of opportunity. And then, again, on the skilled side, I think a lot of it is just really, you know, like we're just kind of talking about off the record, but some of the, you know, providers in the space, why are they in the space? What are they doing? Do we know why they're there? How are they helping us? How are they helping our residents? I think those were things that maybe didn't have as much oversight, you know, previously.
And given your background in managed care and your time at Aetna, how is Trilogy navigating the growth of Medicare Advantage, and what are some of the biggest challenges or advantages you see in this shift?
I'll be completely transparent that I don't think the company was not fully prepared, but fully aware would be a better way of saying it, of what Medicare Advantage is. I think people were looking at it as always the Medicare Advantage payers are the enemy, which isn't necessarily true. I could see how people can come to that conclusion. On the Aetna side, I don't know if it's in any of my bios or stuff, but I actually ran post-acute care area for a while. And so it wasn't just about, you know, hey, we're only going to approve 3 days, 5 days, whatever. Often we were lacking information to make, you know, full determinations. But I think looking at, you know, better payers as good partners is, is one thing for sure. I do think there's definitely increased awareness, and honestly, there has to be acceptance because, you know, in most markets within our footprint, you know, Medicare Advantage plays, you know, a pretty significant role. And so I think you have to figure out how to work smarter with it. You know, like appeals is a good area. I won't name the name, but let's say they're a national company that reviews for a lot of skilled care. And, you know, we were on a call with them. We had quarterly calls, and they're like, well, wait a minute, you're getting all these appeals overturned, you know? And it's like, well, it's because we know what we're arguing for, right? And then the other thing too is, you know, we did have a little bit longer length of stay by a day or so, but our significantly lower return to hospital rate. So it's like, okay, so yeah, we added a quote day in your Medicare Advantage world, but it definitely improved the overall episode of care for that patient or resident. So I think it's just really understanding. And then obviously I-SNPs are Medicare Advantage plans. So, you know, I think just understanding what they are and what they're not. They're not going away. So, I mean, it's much better to figure out how to work with them than work against them.
Does Trilogy have its own iSNP?
We do now. Yeah, we're part of one with a partner group that they're going to talk about tomorrow at the meeting with, it's called Hoosier Senior Care Alliance. So it's with provider partners who are person who's doing it. So Provider Partners of Indiana Health Plan is the official name.
What is your current view on the best path forward for Trilogy and value-based models?
I think understand it, first of all, what they are, what they're not. And I think knowing, you know, who's operating it. You know, if somebody comes to you, not to name a name, but, you know, a large national ISNIP provider and say, hey, we got a deal for you, look very closely at it and see if it's something that's even, you know, not just the money part, but is it something that's going to work for your organization versus the opportunity for you to do it yourself. And that's why we are doing the ISNIP today. So we started January 1st. We're also doing IE SNIPs just in the state of Indiana with the partner group, Hoosier Senior Care Alliance, in I think 23 counties this year. And I think we're close to expanding to 30 next year. And then we're looking at other states now to do it and some other partners. There are some third-party partners, but I think you have to make sure they align with your goals and objectives, and they're not just trying to come in there and honestly use you to get the benefits that you're never going to get. And that's just the ISNIP.
And then what clinical or operational strengths have allowed Trilogy to succeed in value-based care so far, and how do you measure that success?
I think clinically, for sure, or, you know, again, as I think I mentioned today briefly in my talk, that our CNO, Rhonda Dempsey, her team in particular, and our kind of, I don't know if they're finance or what they are, but they watch those things closely. So they know, like, hey, in Ohio, we got to do this or hit that. And we use all kinds of data insights that we gather. So we have a really strong, you know, kind of predictive modeling where we are within those metrics. And then, you know, where we need to get to. And we try to even by building. So, you know, just the ground or the framework, I guess a better way of saying it, is definitely there. And so just to kind of keep harnessing that, I mean, we've already done a lot of the work. And again, you know, value-based care in general is good medical care. I mean, it shouldn't ever be like, oh, it's some special way where you get paid more. It's how you prove that you, like, you have the efficiency, effectiveness, and that you're, you know, doing the right thing. And then, yeah, you might get paid a little more versus somebody who maybe isn't as on top of those things, or they're not doing them as well.
And then Trilogy is known as a top performer for American Healthcare REIT. What sets Trilogy apart clinically, and how are you helping maintain or exceed those expectations?
I mean, I think clinically, I mean, it all starts at the top. I mean, Leanne's a tremendous leader. She's super inspiring. She's out at our campuses, you know, usually a couple, 3 days every week or more. And so she sees it firsthand, and we're definitely, how do they put it? It's a top up, or we're at the bottom of the company, the leadership. So we're there to help support our team. So I think it's a clear message. It's a consistent message. You know, I'm there to help our teams. Rhonda's there to help. Leanne's there to support. So, I mean, I think, you know, just that commitment to quality and excellence know, in every area, not just clinical, is something that's pretty, it's a part of our culture for sure. So it helps.
And then how does, this was also something that was covered in the quarterly earnings calls back to back, I think several times, and caught my attention. But, you know, how does Trilogy's integrated campus model, blending independent living, assisted living, and skilled care, create a strategic advantage in managing residents under value-based care frameworks?
Without getting too in the weeds on it, one of the potentials is you could be in independent living. And as your health, unfortunately, may decline over time, you could, while you're in independent living, you could be in an IE SNP or assisted living. You could be in a program like that. If things were to, you know, as I said, I you don't want to talk about somebody not doing well with their health, but if things were to change and then they needed a higher level of care, then we'd be able to easily transition them you know, that way. So by having, you know, all the pieces, if you will, on our mm-hmm. you know, most of our campuses, not all of them, but most of them, mm-hmm. we'd be able to easily transition. I mean, we want to be there. And I think, you know, that's one of the things we're definitely, and I'm not the salesperson by any stretch, but, you know, we really want to make sure our families, as they choose us as a partner, know that we're going to be there. I mean, mm-hmm. I can use my mom, who's not in a Trilogy facility, but mm-hmm. she came into an independent living, unfortunately had a, mm-hmm. you know, severe stroke that left her, that she's never able to go to even assisted living now. And mm-hmm. she lives on the health center, but she's otherwise living a great life. You mm-hmm. know? So that's the kind of thing we want to be able to provide.
With the rise in resident acuity and staffing challenges, how are you balancing the need for more clinically complex care with workforce capabilities?
So, you know, it's, you hear about that all the time, and I mean that you mm-hmm. do hear about all the time, and it's a valid thing. We had a meeting with one of our hospital partners last week, and, you know, they actually approached us on something. I'm not really exactly sure what it was. By that meaning, you know, I kind of knew what it was, but I didn't want to say what it was because mm-hmm. I don't know if it's something we really want to do. But we often get a lot of that from our hospital partners, like, what are you looking for? What services? So, mm-hmm. for example, could we do a specialized heart failure, you know, unit or something like that, where somebody who maybe had an orthopedic procedure but lives with heart failure, which is obviously probably more significant than an orthopedic procedure, mm-hmm. but how do you do rehab effectively in that kind of, you know, mm-hmm. milieu, if you will? So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that we're looking at in terms of, and then making sure, you know, if, you know, if there's areas where they think we don't have skills, you know, at a hospital partner, we, you know, communicate back and forth through our regular meetings with our mm-hmm. teams with them. So that's definitely one of the things we're trying to make sure that, you know, we're aware. I mean, we're not going to, you know, likely become a place where we're going to be a ventilator destination or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I think just knowing what our capabilities are and what the hospitals are looking for, and if mm-hmm. there's reasons we're not able to meet them, if it's something we can do. And as far as the training part goes, again, you know, our clinical team, they do regular what they call skills fairs, things like that. We've talked, still need some work on it, but just making sure, you know, people fully know what they can do and what they need work on. Mm-hmm. So even how to present a case to a physician, if you have a patient who, you know, might have a change in condition, really mm-hmm. impacts, you know, what might happen. If you have a strong nurse that can easily speak doctor and, you know, communicate the case well, you know, the physician's like, oh yeah, he or mm-hmm. she's got it, you know, versus like somebody's like, gee, I don't know, doc. And, mm-hmm. you know, so those are kind of easier mm-hmm. trainings to do, but definitely working on those things too.
If you were to advise on Medicare Advantage mm-hmm. with your background, what would you say?
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about Medicare Advantage in our business, if you mm-hmm. will. It's not all bad, right? I mean, there was times when I was working on the payer side where I was trying to do things to make things easier. I did a program at another provider, or payer, I should say, where, you know, we were looking at why are we getting appeals? You know, if we're getting appeals, you know, over and over again, we're doing something wrong, mm-hmm. right? You know, so because, and then if we're overturning them is what I'm getting at. You know, if they're appealing it, we're upholding it, then yeah, that's mm-hmm. okay. But I mean, I think just simplifying it, I mean, you know, there should be, you know, they talk about gold carding. I don't like that word, but for lots of reasons. But I do think you should have, like, maybe provider tiers, like, hey, these guys are straight shooters. They're not asking you for 20 days every time, you know. They're asking you for 14 days, and simplify it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, administrative costs, what people don't understand, are often just as high on yeah. the payer side too. I mm-hmm. mean, when you have to do an appeal, it takes time. You got to look through the whole thing, and you have to do different things mm-hmm. versus, and it's, you know, it goes both ways, right? Mm-hmm. So I think getting rid of unneeded and unnecessary care delays would mm-hmm. be really helpful. And it, but I think it's going to have to go in baby steps. You know, yeah. I don't think it's like something that's going to change overnight. I think I would love to see similar, you know, they've talked about it a little bit, but almost like a DRG payment system for certain skilled, short-term skilled stays. You know, if you have somebody come in who's got heart failure, a broken hip, and maybe something else, you know, you get paid X, you know, you get mm-hmm. their care delivered in 18 days or whatever, you know, you get paid enough to provide that care. If you mm-hmm. do it in 16 days, maybe, you know, and again, not yeah. sending people to, you know, short stay patients, but mm-hmm. you know, appropriate lengths of care versus like, hey, every time you have somebody, you know, you it takes forever for you, and your outcomes are no better than anybody else's. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of opportunities out there, mm-hmm. I think, to make it easier, simplify it.
And that'll do it for this episode of Rethink. Once again, I'd like to remind listeners about the Aspect Awards. You can visit aspectawards.com to enter by September 30th. Until next time, thanks for listening.